Hello, welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode number 110, negative. This is your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here on a glorious Sunday night. And what does Sunday night mean? As always, everyone's favorite Sunday night host, guest host, not really guest host anymore, permanent Sunday night host. Let's get rid of that guest thing. Everyone's favorite co-captain Andre Dominguez is on the line. How are you tonight, Andre?
I'm feeling good now that I've got a promotion.
Raise and pay too. You're gonna raise your zero pay all the way up to a 50% increase of zero. So that should be still zero, I guess, if my math is correct. But yeah, but
paid in. So I'm paid in exposure. Am I right?
You're right, and I'm calling this 110 negative because we're going to do this podcast tonight in two separate episodes because we have so much to talk about. Tons of news came out. And so we're going to do it in two separate episodes. And I was like, why should I make it 110 and 111? It's the same night, the same host, and kind of on the same subjects. So we're going to split it in different episodes because we're worried about the Anchor app crashing if we go too long. And so this is going to be 110 negative, and the next episode will be 110 positive. See where I went there? There's a negative positive. See negative. You see that? See what I did there, Andre? See that?
I did. And plus, so much for your patience.
So, and the reason why is we don't want to have the fatal Anchor crash if we try to go too long with these episodes. And plus, I feel like people like to hear my voice in the smallest possible segments as I can put out there. So small bits of me is as much as people can take, I think. So there we go. So we're going to do it in two separate episodes tonight. It's very exciting. But the first one we want to talk about, the reason why this is episode 110 negative. See where I'm going there? See, this is the negative news that came out this week. And it's a big one, and it's got the internet all worked up in arms and the film community just pulling hair out and gnashing teeth. It is Fuji apparently has killed their black and white film, their very famous and much beloved film, Akros. Or I guess it's Akros or Akros. I always said Akros. I'm assuming that's right. But I have never shot Akros. I do know that it's a much beloved film, and especially because apparently it has, like, it's very good with reciprocity failure. It doesn't hardly have as much reciprocity failure as some of the other black and white films. So I know a lot of pinhole guys love it. But Andre, how about you go ahead and chime in about how many tears you shed at the death of Fuji Akros?
Honestly, Mike, not many. Many people that I have talked to about film photography who are very big fans of Akros and, you know, people who are super into pinhole. I know that I've been talking to Alex Purcell quite a bit recently. You know, we'll just go on and on and on about Akros. One of my coworkers at Southeastern Camera, it's his favorite film stock. And I kind of saw this coming a little bit. With just the way that Fuji's been with discontinuing stocks recently, when I started getting interested in pinhole, I thought, you know what, let's play it smart. Let me try to kind of, you know, identify a film stock that would work great for a pinhole that has a similar look, because I don't want to fall in love with Akros only to have my heart broken. And honestly, I think that you know, strategy of not getting attached really worked out in my favor, because when I found out, my reaction was just kind of, yep, yeah, I can, you know, I kind of saw that coming, and I'm not too bummed about it because I've only ever shot one roll of it, and it was, you know, on a day where the conditions really weren't doing my pictures much justice. So I never, even though I'd seen, you know, pictures of other people's work with Akros that were fantastic, I had never kind of gone through the experience of using it to the best of its ability, especially in pinhole photography, and really kind of, you know, getting attached to it. So I'm personally, you know, not personally affected by it. It is disappointing, but I think my strategy definitely paid off. And I do feel for the people who that kind of was their bread and butter.
Yeah, I about a couple of months ago, I guess it was probably a little bit before Christmas. Somebody locally here on Craigslist was selling a big batch of film for like, I think it was like $40, but it was ended up being about, I don't know, 80 to 100 bucks worth of film that I got from this guy for like $40. He just basically didn't just decided he didn't have time to shoot film and was going to join the digital bully army for good. And so I managed to swoop in and grab these things. Most of it was Kodak film, much to my delight, because I think everyone here should know way by now that I'm a Kodak fan. But there was like four rows of 120 Acros in that batch, and I kind of, maybe unknowingly decided not to shoot the Acros. I just put it on eBay and sold those four rows because I was like, I didn't really want to learn a new film stock, and I did kind of in the back of my mind was thinking, well, I don't want to get too attached to Fuji films because, first of all, I'm a Kodak guy, and I don't want to find out that it might be better than my beloved Kodak. But and then secondly, I was like, they seem a little more doubtful at the time. So as far as how much longer they were going to offer at certain film stock. So I'm kind of glad I sold that on eBay and got a little bit of cash off of it. But yeah, I don't know. It's Fuji is kind of disappointing people a lot here lately. There is an interesting article online, and I posted it in, there's a thread on the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group where we talk about the death of or Fuji killing Acros or Acros. And I had found an article, I think it was put up by the Studio C41 podcast. They had found an article. I can't remember where the article originates from, but if you find that, I think it's like something about why Fuji is killing films or something like that is the name of the article. But in that article, it kind of suggests that Fuji may have actually stopped manufacturing film a couple of years ago. Like they might not even be currently manufacturing film, that there's a theory out there that Fuji has made one big, huge, last gigantic batch of films before, and then tore down all the equipment and put all the film in deep freeze. And this was kind of before the film renaissance had really started really kicking up a notch. And so some of these films that they put in the deep freeze from that big last major manufacturer batch are going a lot faster than they thought they would. So, and that's, if that's the case, that's kind of something that like Polaroid did back in the day. It's when Polaroid closed their film production, they did a last big batch thinking it would last years, but it ended up not lasting very long because people were buying it up faster than Polaroid thought they would. Now, I don't know if any of this has really been true or been confirmed, but it's a theory and it seems to be holding true because, why is Fuji killing films in the middle of a time when all the other film manufacturers are seeing an increase in sales unless they don't have the ability to manufacture film anymore? So I don't know, Andre, what do you think about that theory? You think that holds any water or does it seem like something you could believe in or buy?
No, I absolutely can buy that. I mean, I think in terms of, from a business perspective, it's already, difficult enough for a lot of these companies to forecast, demand for film. I'm learning a little bit of sort of the behind the scenes of that with Cinestill right now. It's not at all an easy task. And while we always, talk and gush about the revival of film, and we know that the numbers are going up, it still is a very competitive landscape with in the past 2 years, so many small film producers have been, popping up out of the weeds that I can totally see, a large kind of company like Fujifilm, having trouble forecasting demand. So I wonder if, a few years ago they said before the film renaissance, I wonder if they did say, we're not really able to accurately forecast what this is going to look like for the next 5 years. Why don't we, ramp up production, keep it all in inventory, unfortunately incur pretty high inventory holding costs, but at least have a stockpile that they just slowly whittle down. I mean, I think that's definitely a plausible theory. And there are some things that indicate that is likely to be true. When they announced that they had discontinued Superia 800 and Superia 1600, that's exactly kind of what they had described. They said that, you know, when they, I don't remember exactly when it was announced, it was a few months ago, but they essentially said, you know, at this date, when we announced that the film is discontinued, they essentially said a few months ago, we finished, you know, producing the last of it, and it's already out there in the market, and we still have a little bit, and we're just going to be selling. I'm paraphrasing here, but, you know, Fuji has already admitted to using that practice. As to how far back, like, the last production batch actually went, I don't know. But if there's already inklings of them doing that to a smaller scale with other stocks such as Superia 800 and 1600, I can definitely see that having happened with, you know, Akros. Who knows, maybe the same thing is happening with Pro 400H, with Superia 400. I don't know.
Yeah, it does definitely seem like something is weird about it, because, you know, especially like with black and white, you would think of all the films that would still, you know, be able to maintain at least a decent amount of sales. Black and white seems to be kind of the one that would be more stable, you would think, with the hobbyists and serious amateurs and even some pros that shoot film. But it, for them to get rid of their one and only remaining black and white film, tells me that something's weird about the way they made these decisions. And it does seem like they did decide several years ago to run a big last batch of all their films and just throw it in a freezer and and tear down their equipment. They've made that, they've done that in the past. They did it with Pac Film. They, you know, basically instead of selling the equipment to somebody else, they just tore the equipment out or whatever and didn't offer the machinery to anybody else. But because it seems to me like, you know, even as small as the profits would be for film, since, you know, for a company as big as Fuji, because we need to remember Fuji makes a lot of money in a lot of other areas that have nothing to even do with photography. So even their digital camera market is a very small part of their profit margins. They're a pretty big company involved in a lot of different things. But they also have a certain pride to their film heritage. I remember years ago when Kodak was in a lot of trouble and people, you know, before the film revival or whatever was going on. And one of the reasons I kind of gave up on film for a while is it just, everything looked so bleak. And I remember Fuji coming out very strongly at that time and saying, we will be the last manufacturer of film, you know, that we believe in our film heritage and we will be the last one standing in the manufacture of film. And it turns out it looks like they're going to be one of the first ones gone. So something definitely changed in their mindset. And, you know, it's just, it's interesting, but it's in a way they kind of remind me of Polaroid, because if they did actually, you know, stop film manufacturing several years ago, it would be a lot like Polaroid, who got out of instant film right before it blew up. And here's Fuji that possibly got out of film a little too early and maybe before they could have reaped some of the benefits of this revival. I don't know. It's interesting, interesting thought, but, does any of that, get your blood boiling, Andre? Or
the thing I think that most gets my, okay, before I talk about that, one other thing that I do want to mention is that yes, there are people that are diehard fans of Akros, but if you take a you know, a serious critical look, and I especially encourage the people who were diehard fans of Akros, if you take a serious look at the market, you look at people who are getting into film photography now or getting back into it now, what are kind of the first black and white films that people shoot? I mean, most of the time it's Tri-X or HP5. And yeah, so I wouldn't at all be surprised if, you know, Akros was like, I don't know, like less than 5% of total black and white sales. Obviously we have no idea of these numbers because a lot of these companies aren't, you know, transparent. I would love, like, if I could just get my hands on some like data, if I had, you know, the mystical powers to like extract all this information from these companies to look at it and analyze it, that'd be amazing. But that's just the business nerd in me. But it probably wasn't, you know, even 5% of the total market. So whereas, you know, Fuji may have been really proud of it, people may have loved it, and the people who did buy it bought a decent amount of it. When you compare that with, you know, Tri-X and HP5, you know, the people over in you know, Europe that really like the Rolly films, the Agfa, APX films, it was a strong contender in terms of you know, unique use cases, but it was a tiny player on the global film stage. Anyways, I'll leave it at that. But what I did want to say that kind of does make my blood boil is that when you think about it from a business sense, in terms of the actual machinery, to me, it boggles the mind that Fuji didn't, and this goes back to PacFilm and even now in terms of machinery that they use to produce film and the chemical formulas that are used to make these emulsions. It's a missed opportunity for an additional revenue stream. I understand if a lot of Fujifilm's shareholders are just looking at the numbers and being like, hey, film isn't really making us money. You know, we're not seeing a return on our investment from film, unless it's Instax, which even underwrites their digital cameras. That's actually what supports the continued innovation and research and development of the Fujifilm X series of digital cameras. All that being said, I don't understand why Fuji didn't, instead of scrapping the machines, you know, offer to, at that time, Impossible Project or New 55 or Cat Labs, you know, here's the machinery that we have. It's made for very, very large scale. Not really suited to the production levels that you guys are at just yet, but if you're willing to incur the cost, we'll lease it to you. And I don't know, they could have done like a royalty agreement as well. Every pack of film that you produce using this licensed technology from us, you pay us a certain amount. I just don't understand why they had to scrap the machines, because at the scale that, you know, Polaroid Originals is right now, if New 55 hadn't gone out of business, maybe they could have been a contender as well. I could easily see them, you know, bidding amongst each other to rent or like lease the machines that Fuji was using, or even outright buy the machines that Fuji was using, and continue to produce pack film and have like a licensing royalty agreement. The same thing goes for the actual chemical formulas for the emulsions. You see all these emulsions now that are reformulated from previous films. Bellamy Hunt's Japan Camera Hunters JCH Street Pan was an old security film that, you know, he negotiated with a company that could manufacture it to reproduce it. Ferrania P30 was a chemical formula that they literally found on a sheet of paper in the old Ferrania factories. All these are chemical formulas, raw materials, and somebody with the balls to actually produce it. And yes. So what I don't understand, you know, yes, Fuji's really proud of it. Yes, they want to, you know, kind of keep that to themselves. But if this decision is being driven by, you know, the opinions of shareholders, why would you ever turn your back from a revenue opportunity to license out these machines, to license out these chemical formulas and make a buck on it? That's what I don't understand. That's the thing that makes my blood boil.
Yeah, you're right. Because in a situation like that, they're basically getting rid of like all the risk is off their shoulders. Like they're just there at that point. They can just collect some royalties from these things, and there's no chance of them losing money off of film, you know. And you're right, especially like the chemical formulations on just their normal negative and color films. Yeah, you could sell those to, I'm sure there'd be some companies that would love to have them and produce those films. And even if they don't call it Fuji, they just have to pay Fuji licensing or whatever. It just seems like there is a way that could have been done better. And it's odd. But it's also like, I guess another thing about Acros is, you know, if you really think about it, as far as film goes, the black and white market is way more saturated than the color film market. So yeah, it just makes me wonder, like, imagine when Fuji shuts down when their color films run out. I mean, basically, the color choices are going to be pretty limited. I mean, Kodak's going to pretty much rule the roost there, other than some other, other than like, I guess,
Lomography.
Yeah, Lomography will have theirs. Yeah, and Ferrania, if they get theirs back.
Which, I mean, Lomography is actually the perfect example of that. I was actually able to see kind of like the order form, like the official order form at Southeastern for when we place orders for Lomography film. And there's a country of origin column next to each of the film stocks. And you can see where the different film stocks are, you know, produced. Some in, you know, China, some in Europe, and it doesn't take too much brain power to connect the dots and figure out who's actually producing these different film stocks. Mm-hmm. And so all that is a company that produces a color film. Lomography approaches them and says, you know, hey, we really like your emulsion. You know, we'd like to license the chemical formula. Have you produce it for us? And we'll market it as, I don't know, Lomography Color 400. They always have weird names, the Lady Gray, Earl Gray. They get kind of funky and creative with that. But that could absolutely be something that, you know, could be done. So, I don't know.
It makes me wonder, too, though, maybe Fuji was in a situation like, you know, Kodak has recently has managed to downsize their film manufacturing to where it's a little more feasible to make a profit off film at the levels it sells at nowadays. Maybe Fuji just was kind of in a situation like Kodak, but didn't really feel the need to go through the expense of downsizing their film production lines. And maybe that's it. I mean, by no means do I think that Fuji's like, oh, to hell with you film guys, we're moving on. I don't think that has been their case at all. I'm sure if they had a way to continue to make profits that made their you know, people in charge happy around that place, I'm sure they would have kept doing it. I'm just guessing they just took a hard look at it and decided it just wasn't the future for them. So, I'm sure it wasn't any directed hate towards film photographers, even though we like to feel a little butthurt about it at times.
of course. And I think that, you know, that's, you know, something that I also have to remind myself when I think about this stuff and I get a little angry, is that that's the reality of the film photography industry today, is that the machines and the production processes that were created to make film back when film was the only thing there was are incompatible with today's level of demand. Yes, film is growing. Yes, it's having a renaissance, but you saw it with vinyl, you know, a few years ago. The huge vinyl printing presses that used to dominate the market, they couldn't, you know, feasibly and profitably function at the relatively low level of demand that there was. So what ended up happening? You ended up having either companies retooling their machines to do much, much smaller batches, or you had, you know, little guys doing it from scratch and already building out and planning the production process to make small batches. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost kind of a miracle when you think about it that Kodak and Fuji were able to produce film however profitably that was for as long as they did, because for a number of years, you know, they were still working and you.
Oh no! The dreaded anchor crash that we just talked about it in the beginning of this episode, and I shouldn't have mentioned it because I think it woke up the anchor demons. How dare this app that I pay absolutely nothing for crash on me? But but Andre was in the middle of a point that was going to shake the film community to its core, and he was going to drop the mic and got interrupted. So we're just going to have to pick up and figure out where we are at here. Andre, go ahead and shake the foundation of the film community.
As Mike is wont to do, you know, he's just flattering me. I do want to just kind of wrap up the point that I was saying, similar to kind of how if you've been tracking sort of the revival of vinyl, the reason why it's at today and why vinyl sales are outselling CDs is because a lot of small vinyl printing presses kind of approach the revival of the format by really scaling down and creating small printing presses to accommodate, you know, the lower levels of demand. And now they're at a point where they can start, you know, expanding their production lines, buying or manufacturing larger and larger machines. Whereas, you know, with film, it was kind of the opposite. You had the big players like Kodak and Fujifilm with these huge machines that were then having to scale down. And you've got, you know, small guys like, you know, CineStill that are already kind of starting off with a small production process and then slowly ramping up as demand increases. So while it's kind of a sad day for Akros and for Fujifilm in general, do know that there's a lot of companies out there that are taking that alternative approach of starting small, you know, going with small machines and small production sizes. And you may have situations right now, like Lomography is actually finding, if you guys listen to the Sunny 16 podcast, Rachel and Graham actually talked to the folks over at Lomography UK, and they're saying, look, we realized that for the past, you know, 6 to 12 months, we've had stockouts worldwide. The demand has just been completely outstripping our supply, and we're reformulating things and renegotiating with the people that actually produce the film in order to better meet that demand. So things are changing for the better. The little guys are growing and growing each year, and I do very much hope that, you know, with Kodak's recent efforts, that they succeed, that the guys over at Ferrania are able to, you know, scale down those huge machines to finally, you know, start producing things profitably for them. But it's a small sad anecdote in the larger, very happy and inspiring story of the revival of film, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, and when my band got a vinyl made a couple years ago, we went with a small press here in Kentucky, and I actually remember driving to this building. And I actually passed it up because I was somewhat in my mind of picturing a little bit larger facility, but this place looked like a tiny, tiny little building. I was like, no way that this is that my Google Maps has steered me wrong. There's no way they're making vinyl in this tiny, tiny building. And I went in there, and sure enough, it was it. And they were so busy that it took us like almost a year to get our vinyl actually pressed. So they were that far behind. But that's just an example of how much vinyl has grown. But and they're a small player that has, you know, actually needs to probably increase their production at this point because the wait time is so long to get something made in that that particular vinyl press. But another thing is, I think we need to think about is, you know, we see a lot of positive news in the film community in the last couple of years. And I don't think this announcement from Fuji is something that says, oh, well, this film renaissance, it wasn't a thing, or it isn't actually growing. It was just our imagination. I think this is a situation. I don't think we should take this as a negative as far as film sales as a whole, because I think this is just a corporate decision that Fuji made maybe several years ago before this thing was actually taken off. And maybe it was a bad, maybe short-sighted decision on their part, but I don't think it actually tells us anything about what's actually going on in the film as far as film sales. But one thing I want to get to before we finish this episode is kind of a more philosophical type approach to this. And I hear a lot of people talking about this, people mad about it, say, oh, I'll never support Fuji again. I won't even buy their digital cameras. And other people are like, well, hey, maybe we should stop supporting Fuji and buy film from people that want to provide it for us. Let's move to Kodak and Ilford, because at least they're providing us films, and Kodak's bringing out new films. And why should I continue to give money to Fuji when they're just killing off films as quick as possible? So it's an interesting, you know, sort of a dilemma, I guess. If you're a big Fuji film fan, you know, do you continue? I guess there's two approaches. You go ahead and move on to one of the more viable film manufacturers, or you stock up like crazy so that you can shoot your beloved Fuji for the next, you know, upcoming years or so. I'm not really sure where I'm at with it, because Fuji is not a film that I actually use very much. So it's not really going to affect what I do or how I approach buying film. But, you know, it's just, I'm not sure exactly what the right I guess the right take to take on that is, but you know, I guess everyone has to kind of decide themselves, but should we as film photographers, you know, support those that seem to be getting out of film, or should we, you know, support those that are seem to be more committed to film? It's an interesting dilemma. Andre, how do you feel about that particular subject?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely a good question. It's one that I've been, you know, having a lot with the folks over at Southeastern Camera while I've been at work. And there's definitely people in both camps. You know, my good friend Wilson, he's already put out, you know, two zines completely shot on Acros. It's his absolute favorite film. When they discontinued 4x5, he bought close to 200 sheets in total. As soon as the announcement came out, before we even really knew whether or not it was 100% legit, which also I might add, you know, we still don't know whether or not this is 100% without a doubt legit until Fuji actually, you know, puts out some form of official press release. So this could all be for naught, I might add. But wouldn't that be funny?
Yeah.
Tizzy just to be like, no, guys, that was fake. That was, I don't know if they do April Fool's, but, you know, maybe it was just a mistaken, you know, a fake post or a mistaken translation. Who knows? But it's an important discussion to have regardless, because the reality is that Fuji has discontinued films in the past, and they're likely to discontinue more in the future. But
yeah.
I'm definitely not in the camp of stocking up on films. I think similar to you, Mike, Fuji's stocks have never been ones that I've been super into. Yes, I know I've kind of gushed about Superior 400. That's kind of the first film that the first color film that I ever shot, and so a lot of my early work is on Superior 400. But I think that as I've matured as a photographer, as my style has progressed, I'm leaning much more towards portrait right now. So even the kind of the nostalgia and kind of feelings that I had toward that have kind of gone. I prefer portrait over 400H. I am really enjoying their slide film right now, but that's the one that I think is really kind of going to kick the bucket soon. I'm not in that position of really wanting to stock up. I do have five rolls of Acros and 35. So if anybody wants to trade anything, hit me up. And I also want to say a disclaimer to the people that that won giveaway things from me for the 100th episode. I am so terribly sorry that I have not yet sent those out. I've been completely slammed with work at school and, you know, projects that Cine still has me working on, plus working at the camera store and picking up shifts from my coworker that is on vacation. So I will get those out to you as soon as possible. But thank you so much for your patience. I haven't gotten any angry messages from people, but I wanted to put that out there.
Well, that's it. I mean, he can't run away from us. We know where he podcasts, so we can always
leave but, me hate now.
Well, I think we've pretty much done a pretty good long episode here about this Fuji situation. This is the negative episode of 110, and the next episode we're going to put out tonight is the positive. We're going to talk about a bunch of positive news in the next episode because we don't want to leave you with a foul taste in your mouth. So we're gonna like cleanse it with some refreshing bourbon announcements, or actually just positive film announcements. But we'll cleanse the palate with the alcohol of good news. And boy, that just didn't make any sense whatsoever. It was a horrible analogy. But so Andre, let's wrap this thing up. Where can people see your work?
People can see my work at timelessstreets.com, on Instagram at adominguez64, and on the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. And thank you, Mike, for making the plug early in the episode.
Every once in a while, every dog has its day, Andre. So, okay, you can see my work on Instagram at GutterManPhoto, on Facebook at Mike Gutterman Photography. You can email this program at guttermanphoto@gmail.com. And yes, go to the Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photography Podcast Facebook group. All right, that's it. We'll be back with the positive episode of 110 coming right at you next. But for now, everyone stay positive.
Andre? And shoot some cool film photos.
All right, we will see you soon. Thank you very much.